Today's guest on Superwomen is Laura Brown, currently the editor-in-chief of InStyle magazine. I think InStyle magazine is known throughout the entire universe as one of the most incredible fashion magazines there is. Before that, she was at Harper's Bazaar. And what I love about Laura is she's strong, she's powerful, and man, she gets what she wants. And to top it off, she's really, really, really funny, and I love her sense of humor. Take a listen to Laura Brown on Superwomen. So this is a one-off because we're in Laura Brown's office, the editor-in-chief of InStyle.
Sorry, so am I. yes, you're here where all the magic happens.
I'm looking at a cover of Miss Aniston, which is gorgeous.
Yes, I'm staring at six covers of Jennifer Aniston and one cover of Megan Rapinoe and Sue Bird. So it's for the beauty issue, and I just think it's the most perfect mix of ladies, so which is what I try to do at the old InStyle. So yes, this is the October issue, and then we have to do November and then December and then January and February, and we just have to keep doing it.
It's a lot.
It's exhausting.
Can we go back to when yes. you were a young lady?
Oh, a young lady. Yes. I don't know as much of a lady, but I was certainly young.
Can you start telling me what made you want to get into magazines?
Yes. I always say delusions of grandeur.
So you thought you were going to be in the limo with everything?
No, it wasn't even that. It was like more just like I wanted to be. No, I didn't want to like, you know, no, I was like 9 years old. I didn't know there was such a thing as a Hamptons house or anything. But like I wanted to be in it. I wanted to be like where the fashion was happening and where the glamour was and where the movies were. And it was because I was brought up in Australia. And in Australia when I was a kid, which was like kind of, you know, early 80s, we didn't have internet, we didn't have anything. And so everything was sort of happening somewhere else. And that's a blessing and the curse of Australia, you know, and especially what's changed obviously completely now with internet and social media and everything else. But it was, so I was sort of hungry for an experience or to be close to things that I found glamorous, I guess. And not, a cliche glamour. I think glamour was being able to see something with your own eyes when it sort of happened and see creativity kind of manifest itself on a big stage. And we just didn't really have that. So for me, it was just like, I've got to be part of it. So I would get all the magazines. I'd buy all the Vogues and the Harper's Bazaars that were, you know, which came in like 3 months late to Australia then. And just was obsessed with them, all the supermodels and all of that. Or like early, geez, hang on. Was it maybe early W magazines?
Yeah.
We didn't really get InStyle down there. I don't know if that I remember anyway, but that was, no, when InStyle started, I was in my last year of college. So I wasn't quite in that like dreamy childhood idea of InStyle, but I'd read them and I would just sort of go away in my head to whatever this place is now, to this glamorous office.
So you moved when? How old were you when you moved?
Moved to New York.
Yeah.
I did a stint in London for like 2 years, came back, and then I moved to where am I? New York. I was 27.
Okay.
And I moved here on September the 4th, 2001.
Oof.
Thank you. Thank Oof. You. Master of strategy here.
Okay. My first fashion show was September 10th, 2000.
The one of your own?
My first. It was like a group show.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I feel your sister.
And I remember because I hustled my way somewhere. My friend, Libby Calloway, she was the editor, fashion editor of the New York Post at the time, and she'd kind of taken me and we met in Australia. And we went to the Marc Jacobs show on the 10th night. And it was, I just remember it was like this sort of like Dionysian feast. It was the most incredible like fashion show on this pier, and these walls came apart, and there was this whole Greek like, it was just the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. I remember just like seeing like Rosanna Arquette or something. I just was beside myself. And I'm like, I'm here. I'm in New York and I'm at the fashion show of fashion shows, and I've had a bit of champagne and I'm wobbling around. And I was like, I got it. And then the next morning.
I know. You know. It was over.
Yeah. So, but I never wanted to, look, again, lucky enough, I didn't lose anyone. Was not, you know, I cannot complain about any, you know, I cannot mention any of that, but I just arrived. My poor mother was like, because, you know, her, obviously horrendous it was on TV from Australia. It looked like World War III.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and my mom was like,
get out of there.
Your bags are still packed. You can come home. And I was like, I'm like in Gristiti's, like buying some tuna. And I'm like, no, I'm here now. But I never wanted to go. I just was in it, you know.
And had you already started working in magazines at that point, or you had just moved?
No, I was in magazines before. I'd started in magazines at home. I was probably about 6 years I had been since I was about 20 2 years in Australia, 2 years in, 2 years ish in London, 2 years back in Australia, then here. So I had a bit of, I moved here because I had some like, it's like a foreign journalist visa, it's called. Like you do work from outside the country. They'll let you come to the country if your work is from Australia or da da da. So I did that until I got my first sponsorship, which was for W Magazine. W Magazine hired me as a senior editor in 2002, I think. And forever grateful to them because they made an honest woman of me. I mean, like, Jesus, I think about people needing to get like working visas now with this administration. It's terrifying. Impossible. So I'm very glad that I was earlier. And yeah, so then I just kind of just got going. I worked at, before W, I worked at like freelance for Talk Magazine for like 6 weeks until that closed down. And it just was like, what? And the first few months were just like a dream sequence. I was like, did that happen? Oh, that wasn't very good, was it? Like just over again. And I used to have a roommate on St. Mark's Place who we were like in a double level apartment and she had to like walk, I was upstairs, she had to walk through my room to go to the bathroom. I mean, they're the things we do. Yeah.
I walked through my friend's bedroom to get to the bathroom and what, you know, she was still a virgin. I remember the first night she was losing her virginity and I had to like
walk through.
I like held it as long as I could, but I was like, girlfriend, I got to pee. It was so very awkward.
They just stopped.
Yes. And I was like, sorry. Not awkward at all. Well,
the
things
we do in the big city, you guys. Mm-hmm.
So you obviously see on your Instagram,
yes,
everything, the glamorous side of this job. I would love to hear.
Yes.
I would love to hear the not glamorous side, the hard.
I think you know what's interesting is, in a weird way, it's somewhere in the middle because the people... I always say if all the fancy people, the shiny people I call them, if they're all ducks on a pond, right? I've always been able, luckily, to sort of see the legs moving, like to see what, you know, every person I know who's a celebrity has had something happen to them, of course. Like they've had marriage or fertility or body issues or stardom or lack of stardom. And there's always something that I look at and I go, I have a lot of respect and love for a lot of the people that I've met and work with, but I don't envy anyone. And I think that that's important that I want to put out there more. It's not necessarily like, this is glamorous and amazing and wowie wowie. They go and put their clothes on for a red carpet and they've got to make sure they look cute in their dress. And then they get bombarded by questions and they get off the red carpet and they go and promote all this stuff and they get paid a lot of money. Great. They get free stuff. Great. They have a nice house. Great. They get followed everywhere they go forever. I wouldn't say that's super great. So I think that part. But, yeah, no, I think that's the doing of the work of putting a magazine together is it's a lot of work. And especially when you propel it, you are the editor-in-chief. You are a producer, but you're also a host, kind of. It's like you're going to make it happen, but you also got to be like, this is the greatest.
So you're on.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of the day, you sleep a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I go to bed for like, if there's not 8 hours on the clock, I will weep. openly weep. But because I sort of hurtle around. I have this sort of idea that, and I can't do it all the time, but if you show up for me, I show up for you. And especially we just had our 25th anniversary issue come out for September. And I asked a bunch of former cover stars to sitting for us in an interview. And 15 of them said yes, which was beyond. And I was like, fine, okay, if you are going to do that for me, I'm going to interview each and every one of you. So I was like an octopus being like, Cameron Diaz, Kerry Washington, Reese, Michelle Pfeiffer, Meg Ryan, what have you learned? How have you changed? Okay, thank you. Anyway, next one, you know what I mean? But it was like, I have to do that because, and Reese was like, you're mad, like interviewing. And I was like, yeah, but I mean, she can talk. She works her ass off too, you know? So that's really important to me. And I'm also in a constant state of sort of overexcitement. Like if I want to, you know, I mean, as soon as like after World Cup, I was like, Megan Rapinoe is unbelievable. And I was, you know, learning about Sue and I was like, I want to get those guys for the beauty issue for all the reasons that is beautiful. And so for them to say yes, and then we hustle, we go, okay, we got to do this in Seattle in 8 days. And we all go and we do it. And then it comes back and we're just so proud. We're like, because you've got to be reactive.
Right.
And I think a lot of other folks in this industry aren't particularly. And it's fine. I find it very weird that you can't just like,
yeah,
you got to hustle a little bit. But yeah. And then I'm also like, you know, if somebody says yes to who has been a hero of mine in the magazine, I'm just so excited. I'm like, I've got to go.
Yeah.
I've got to go to the shoot. And I'm like, shit, I can't go everywhere because of my... just health,
health, you know? Or any personal life you might want to have.
But as I do, and when you do something great, you can surf on that for weeks. Like when we were putting together the anniversary issue, we did this thing called 25 Dresses, or sorry, it's called Iconic, but we called it 25 Dresses, which was taking some of the most famous red carpet dresses of the last 25 years. And I was like, well, to make that interesting and like modern, we wanted to put it on models now and put them in the streets and do that. And as the film was coming in, we were all just like, oh, like we just knew it was good. Yeah, we just knew it was good. And we were like, and I, that old fashioned pleasure of like printing out your layouts and looking at them on the floor or like mixing them around or getting out a pair of scissors, you know, and like making an image or changing an image. It's so old fashioned and it's so wonderful. And it's also what actually will help everybody survive, you know, is actually the old fashioned things, telling a story, creating an image, putting it out there. It's not about your SEO or your digital acronym XYZ. That's all fine. But if you don't have the idea and you don't have that little, then you know, nowhere.
Totally.
Yeah, nowhere. So I feel very, very strongly about that. And I actually said that I was profiled for this Australian magazine and the writer put it really well. She said, print is the queen and digital's the carriage she rides on.
I thought
that was really absolutely true. So it's like, I really love to make magazines. And I also say, what's Instagram? It's a magazine, guys.
Right.
Like, you know, it's not, when I first got here, my old bosses at Time Inc., they're like, you can't call it a magazine, you have to call it a brand. I'm like, dudes.
It's a magazine.
It's a magazine. It's all right. A magazine can be literally on your phone or it can be sitting on my desk.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, a brand always sounds like...
like you're going to put slap InStyle on the side of some sunglasses.
Yeah. It just doesn't sound as personal. It doesn't sound as sort of invested.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, what is your brand? Like, I don't have a brand. Like, you know, I just always find, I find that the most, one of the least human words. So I try not to go in. Oh, that's my phone. It makes a weird noise. I'm just going
to
hang up.
You know, if it's Oprah, we can talk to her.
I don't even know.
I would be okay with that.
No, I screen Oprah often. Yeah.
She stalks you. From Harper's to here, what was that phone call like? Or
from
what was that email
them
like?
Them approaching me or me leaving?
Both.
Okay. All. I, it was funny.
Because that's a big jump.
Yeah.
For many reasons.
By the time I was executive editor at Bazaar, so me and Glenda were, you know, quite thick as thieves, and I was coming up with all these crazy ideas and doing all these portfolios. And there was a lot of jobs within the time I was there. And then I got a call from the head of HR at Timing. And then right after that, or around that time, Ariel Foxman resigned, left. And I was like, I don't know what she was calling me about. And then when he resigned, I went, oh.
Interesting.
Ooh. And then I ended up going sort of on like a mad round of speed dating with just like various Timing poobahs.
Okay.
And so I did all of that. And then I wrote a memo.
What did the memo
like,
say?
I wrote a memo about what, I can't even remember, but it was like so, I sat in my, just what I think InStyle could be. And actually I said, what I boiled it down to, I was like, InStyle actually has the greatest name. It's in style. So take it back to that.
Right.
Like take it back to like, if you are in the magazine, you're in style. If you read the magazine, you're in style. Like it doesn't have to be like Harper's Bazaar is a trickier name. Vanity Fair is a trickier name and it's fine. They stand for something now, but I was like, let's take this back. Let's distill it. And so I made, so anyway, so I was like, let's just, we got it. And then we got to have to give it more. It was very, very nice, but it was quite sedate, you know, and quite quiet. And I was like, okay, I'm going to really take its butt and kick it. So, yeah, they hired me. And that was, I remember when they gave me my offer letter with the old head of HR, Greg Giangrande, a.k.a. the Jeej, who will appreciate this shout out. It was summer. It was August. It was 3 years ago. And I just was like, and I went and sat. We were down here. And I went and sat just in the park on the grass with my little wedges. And I just went, oh, okay. And then we had some, it was a bit tricky getting me over here from up there. But anyway, I got here. And
was it hard to tell Glenda, being that you were so close?
You know, it was crazy. She was away on vacation, which was not how I wanted to do it at all.
Yeah.
You know, and she was in like St. Lucia or something.
Yeah.
And I had to call her and like, we're really close, you know, and she just was like, brilliant. Like, you're brilliant, you know, and she was actually
That's cool.
the most, the most gracious of everyone at that company to like let me go. Like she that's was like, awesome. You deserve it. I'm so proud of you. Like, you know, that's she's really proud of like she's really me and Christina O'Neill, who's the editor in chief of WSJ. Christina and I came up together at Bazaar. So sort of the Bailey finishing school, really. So yeah. So then I started just about 3 years ago this week, I think, here.
Wow. I hope they're planning a big party for you.
Nah. You know what my party is? Sleep. No, I'm just like, my party is not having to go to any parties.
Right?
No, I just got everybody wildly drunk for our celebration of our September issue. Oh, so it was great. If you didn't even make it in the next morning, I was so proud.
You're like, yes.
I just hassled them all day. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Can you not make it? Can I have an update on Blavis and me? Anyway, so yeah, 3 years later.
So how do you sort of foster community here or deal with staff or...
Alcohol. No,
I don't see your alcohol cabinet.
Oh, it's all
cabinet.
In the drawers. Oh, okay. It's right behind you your sister. It. Okay. It's everywhere. Okay. Anyway, I think when I got here, I'm not that sort of person that is... Like, I call it the BFM, the bad fashion movie. Like, I don't act like I'm in a bad fashion movie. So I wasn't going to come in and go, I'm bringing in a bunch of cool people and you'll have to get out. Like, I'm not that freaking guy. I'm an only child. I'm a bit of a pleaser at the end of the day. So I just was like, okay, guys, I'm going to do all this cool stuff. Who wants to do cool stuff? And the ones who I loved, I call the sunflowers because they go, oh, we can, we will. Sorry, I'm being a sunflower. You can't see, but just imagine. Anyway, and I could tell that they were up for being challenged more than they were and more being more reactive, and I would give them more ownership. And so it was like, I mean, we have, obviously, breaking news, it's been a bit, we had a whole company sold and a bunch of stuff happening at Time Inc. So I have a smaller staff than I walked in to. But everybody just rallied. And that's the thing. If everybody knows they're here to work and to do a good job, but what's been great is just seeing sort of the, it's a very corporate term, but like the wins we've had or the, like, the photographer that we've never worked with that showed up for us, or the actress, or just all of this stuff. This magazine is worlds, solar systems away from what it used to be. And the people that show up. And so people feel real, my team feels real pride. And they're like, they'll be like, oh, yeah, we did that. And they get a little hustly, a little shoulder. Now I'm shaking my shoulders. Like Hillary Clinton, when she did that good, had that good point in that debate that time. Anyway, and I was like, oh. So they kind of, we're all propelling each other.
Yeah.
And we also, we don't have any fluff. We don't have any room for... Want any desire for drama? We have none here.
That's like fantastic.
Zero. Because we're too busy. We're just nice people. Like everyone says, your team is great, and I know, and we laugh, and we show up, and I expect my photo department to produce a shoot well and on budget. And if I can't go to do what I would want, of course. But I don't micromanage either. I don't go. I mean, most of the concepts come from me, at least for now, until I become exhausted. But
I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I want your energy reserves.
Since the moment we first met,
we had three glasses of rosé.
Oh, we did. Oh, yeah. I've never touched the stuff since.
Oh, right.
So it's been like, for a while it was like turning around a cruise ship, which was quite slow because it was a large ship. And now we feel we're much more nimble. We're a speedboat. And I think compared in our industry, we are. I really feel that, and I'm not even being like big ups in style. I just feel there's a lot of passivity and fear and lack of imagination out there, and it kind of freaks me out because I'm like, I'm a fan of magazines. I want magazines to be great.
Yeah.
You know?
So what do
anyway,
you tell?
So what I
do you,
what I can.
What do you tell the youth?
The youth?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you tell them to stay hardworking and not?
Yeah, show up, intern, like intern, just get to where you want to be, get physically near where you want to be. And for interns, I always say, get the lunch. It's not like a diva, get my lunch. If I'm in this office, I'm stuck here. It's like I'm running a deli. People are in here every 2 minutes. Da-da-da. I've never had an unwatched meal at my desk. Like I'm just eating my chicken and everyone's watching. But if an intern like brings me my lunch, they actually get more time with me.
Right.
Than anyone would otherwise. Like I see my awesome intern, Kathleen, out there. More than half of the office, So it's not that sort of faux, sincere, like be humble, you know, it's not like that, but it's just like show up and be up for it and get to near where you want to be. And I do think that if you've got this sort of job in your DNA, you won't have to write a list or you won't have to be like, I need to do that. You won't have to force it because this is a sort of industry that you just have in your guts or you don't.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can't really learn it. You want to be part of it. You want to be... you're curious about the next thing. You want to go to the show or the art exhibition or the movie or the new Netflix series or whatever. You want to do that. And so if you're going to not be sort of hungry for it, it's not really the place for you.
Totally. So I had an interesting conversation yesterday where the woman I was interviewing was like, you know, with entrepreneurs, like there's all this talk about your personal life and your work life. And a lot of people do that because some people are just clocking into their job. So they want to have that separation. Right. But as an entrepreneur, it's your job. It's all, your passion. All it's the all time. Mingled.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that you approach this as your entrepreneurial self.
Yeah.
So what is your personal life and do you have one or is it just all one big soup?
I think, look, the good part about, you know, I moved to New York to be in this industry in a weird way because it was a lifestyle choice. Like if my lifestyle choice was to be at home in Sydney and be able to go to the beach every day and raise a family, and that is unbelievable and wonderful and very, I would have done that. But I came here because all the things happened here. So that was already part of my life or part of my personal life. No, I do have a personal life. I just got engaged about 8 months ago to a delightful man called Brandon. No, I think that as, you know, when you're younger and you're hustling everywhere and you want to go to like
everything,
Bungalow 8, remember that?
Marquee,
and you want to go everywhere. I think as you get older and you get more established, you don't need to. Mm-hmm. And you're also like, I don't need to, I sort of have a joke, I have liver credits. I'm not going to like go and waste my liver on like some dumb party or dinner that I don't want to go to. I'm going to use liver credits with my friends or my, you know what I mean? Or like people I really love. I'm not running around to, I mean, obviously during the fashion weeks, I have to go to more, but I very rarely go to fashion events, you know, especially in New York because I've done it and people know what I produce. If you want to be part of InStyle, it's very clear. It's on stands and online every day. And I feel like the industry needs to work on that sort of idea of obligating people to show up to places like it's the 1950s. You know, it's just like, we don't have to do that. So that's why, because people have families, because people have three kids and they need to take care of themselves. So it's all, that needs to be respected as well, because it's a very, very challenging time in what we do every day for a living. And sometimes you just want to like go home. But it did take me a while to sort of, I've had various, some of my former assistants, I'm like, yeah, I can do that thing. And then at the last minute, like, I can't do the thing, you know, because I'm just exhausted. And now Sid, my assistant, is great, but she's like, are you really going to do that? And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. So it's a matter of managing myself and having somebody help me manage myself.
Totally. But I instituted that with mine. I said, you need to check me when I say yes to everything, because then I regret it. And the hour before I have to go or
you
whatever,
want to die.
I'm like, why did I say yes to this? And she's like, you said yes. You told me to RSVP you.
Yeah. But this thing, I also like when I'm home, and because I travel so much, I want to be in my house.
Yeah.
Like we had a weekend, we've been running around all summer, but we had a weekend at home weekend before last, and I was like, right, I'll go out for dinner with my friends two nights. I'm inside, I'm going through the kitchen cupboards. And I just was like, but it makes me feel more
grounded.
Cheesy earth or something. Like, I've got my house together. I bought some new orchids and I'm putting a new candle, like some whatever bullshit. But like, it makes me feel like I have a springboard that then I can then just jump off. And if that's not kind of right, I get anxious.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I have two last questions for you. Just two.
Mm.
This is a good one though, but I really want it to be a powerful one.
Oh shit.
I ask all my guests, what is something we'd be surprised to know about you? Can be embarrassing, can be non-embarrassing.
No, I think I come from a family of dairy farmers.
I love that. I come from a family of dairy farmers.
Where?
In Madison, Wisconsin.
No, the cheese place.
Yes.
My dad went there once to the cheese festival, whatever it's called.
Did he eat cheese curds?
Probably.
Okay.
No, my dad was, my dad and mum met in the country. My dad was he's up in the sky now, but he was a dairy farmer, literally Farmer Brown. So he farmed dairy. My sister is a dairy farmer. Every morning she gets up at, 4:30 or 5 o'clock and milks cows every day, twice a day. She's a total legend, lives in rural New South Wales and is the greatest. And all of my, you know, I don't have any sister brothers on my mum with me, so all my extended family are born of a farm.
Love that.
You know, and I was crappy at it. Like when I was in like high school and I was trying to be glamorous all the time and I was like, I'd go visit my dad at like the Royal Easter Show and he would literally sometimes just be like taking a nap like on a cow. Like the cow would be like napping and dad would just be like, I'm reclining on a cow, just imagine. And And I'd be like, how much can you, like, if the cow wins the prize, like, how much can you sell it for? And I'm literally in my heels, like, wandering around all this cow shit. And, like, yeah, so, but I do, my farm and my dairy farmer family, they're legends. Legends, as we say, it's a bloody legends.
I'm going to try the milk when I go to Australia. Just want to let you know.
Yes. Let you know how it tastes. It's all ours, every single part.
So my last question for you is, any advice you'd like to pass on, whether you learned it mm-hmm. and it was valuable or someone gave it to you and you just think, you know, it's worthwhile?
I say this a lot, but I do really believe it. I always say underthink it. Nothing. Has anybody ever overthought anything and gone, God, that worked out better? Never.
I hate overthinkers.
Oh, squirrely in your head. Like, no. Just like, if you're where you're meant to be professionally, and hopefully we all find our way, or those of us who have the option, just your gut's a wonderful thing. You know what I mean? Just be good. Do good work. Be kind. Good things happen to good people. Go to bed at night knowing that you weren't a dick to anyone. You know, and then get up again, do it again.
High five.
I'm so basic.
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
That was Laura Brown. To find out more about her, you can follow her at LauraBrown99 or just pick up an InStyle. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Superwomen.